Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Rise and shine, fantasy players. It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Wednesday, June 20th. Let's cock-a-doodle-do it. It is Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I am your host, Dane Martinez. They call me Speeds, spin statistician. I am proud and honored to always have as my co-host, FSWA Hall of Famer, the king of fantasy, Scott Angle. Scotty, I looked up at my standings this morning and the Trevor-ending story after a great outing from Mike Clevenger, another save from Corey Knebel. We have tied for first place. I am feeling good. How you feeling?
Fantasy baseball-wise, not as good. I was in first place a few weeks ago. Now I'm in second, and I'm starting to drop. I'm now 13 points out, and the third-place team is a point behind me, and the fourth-place team is 4.5 behind me. So I need my guys to start picking it up.
All right. You need to pick it up. But listen, Scott, I have faith in you. I trust in El Rey de Fantasía. Absolutely.
Gracias. And listen, muy amable.
Absolutely. We got a good show for you, okay? We're going to give you all the news and notes from around the league that you need. We're going to, you know, preview some of the closers. Listen, George Kurtz has a great article up there on rotoexperts.com, as usual. We'll get you ready for DFS today on a Wednesday, okay? And here's the other thing, Scott. Our face of baseball brackets, they move along, and we've got a good matchup today. I think this could be one of the best matchups of the tournament. Scott, we have the number 3 seed, Jose Altuve, who has taken over the top spot in All-Star game voting. So you got to think he's going to do pretty good in a bracket like this. The 3 seed, Jose Altuve, going up against the 6 seed, Mike Stanton. I think that is going to be a very interesting match. Giancarlo, Mike, you know, it depends. You know, he drops the mic.
He wants to be called Giancarlo.
I know. He dropped the mic, and he actually dropped the mic again last night with his 17th home run of the season. We'll get into that. But, Scott.
Yeah, he's been picking it up lately.
Yeah, he has. But listen, Scott, I don't want to just leave with the Yankees every day. You know what I mean? But where do you think this – where do you think this is going to go here? Altuve versus Stanton. Handicap this one for me, Scott.
This is a tough one. Yeah. Who's the better all-around player? Jose Altuve. Who's better known in a bigger media market? Mm-hmm. Giancarlo Stanton. Who has a ring and has been a big part of that? Jose Altuve. We could sit here and argue. It ultimately comes down to who is better known. And I would have to say I'm going to give the slight nod to Altuve because he's part of a championship team. Mm-hmm. He's done a lot more marketing deals. Mm-hmm. And until this year, Giancarlo Stanton was mired in Miami.
I think that's fair. I think Altuve is going to sneak this one out, but I do think it's close. I am reminded a few years ago, I think, there was a great picture at the All-Star game of, like, these two guys standing next to each other, you know? I mean, standing at, like, what, 6'7 or so? Altuve at, like, 5'4. It's a striking, interesting image. There's another one like that that I'll talk to you about, Scott, a little bit later on in the show. I don't know if you caught Fantasy Freestyle yesterday.
No, but, I didn't. I missed that, but I can listen to it on demand. But, you know, like I said, Stanton has really come along lately, and I think this is a story no matter who he plays for because he got to such a bad start. In the last 7 days, hitting .385 with mm-hmm. 2 homers and 6 RBIs. This month, he's hitting .273 with 6 home runs and 11 RBIs. So Stanton is certainly picking things up. Mm-hmm. He was interviewed by the YES Network last night after the game and saying, you know, that he's picking up things more sharply and getting into more of a groove, and I think you're starting to see the results.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for all his slumping, he's got 17 home runs and 40 RBIs.
That's the thing. I mean, like, I'll take that kind of slump. That's still on pace for, you know, between 35 and 40 home runs. You got to take that. And listen, Scott, without going too far into it, I think that is the beauty of how deep this Yankees lineup is, right? Like, even when he was quote-unquote scuffling, other people will pick him up. I said it before that also when Gleyber Torres came up, he didn't really have the pressure or the spotlight like he might on some other teams. You know, people like Andujar have been able to toil and impress without that kind of pressure. I mean, Gleyber with his 14th yesterday, Stanton with his 17th, and Andujar, I believe, with his 9th, Hicks with his 10th. The power outing happened for the Yankees. But I want to ask you, because listen,
what is the biggest complaint we always heard about Stanton? Sorry to interrupt you there.
No, no, the injury prone,
always,
I guess?
Always about health. Now,
right,
look,
the injuries.
We're not even halfway there yet, but, mm-hmm. you know, he has stayed healthy. And you talk about the rest of the Yankees picking it up. The biggest concern I think people had, both real and fantasy-wise, was the pitching. In the month of June, they have a 1.97 ERA, which is best in the American League. You're getting really good performances out of guys you may not expect it with. You know, take what you can get fantasy-wise.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where I wanted to go with this, Scott, because one of those guys is, you know, Domingo Germán pitched very well yesterday, Scott. And I know we want the trade piece and blah, blah, blah. Here's what I want to ask you. Two things about Germán. A, could you see Germán as a viable maybe trade piece to someone else? You know,
no.
He is a young pitcher.
No.
Okay. And two,
the
would
Yankees
you ever
are looking
see-
for pitching. They're not going to trade it away.
Yeah, but they're looking for more elite pitching, and you may have to flip something
no,
young in order
you,
to get
you,
it.
No. You got to flip something out of the minors, like Justice Sheffield. You know, Germán is already pitching well at the major league level. You don't screw with that.
Okay, so let me ask you the following question for you. Listen, if Germán is wind up, you know, he's probably, even if they don't make a trade, if you slate the Yankees pitchers, he's probably like the fifth starter right now. Could you see a universe where in the
maybe
postseason,
fourth.
Germán, okay, could you see a universe where in the playoffs or something, Germán comes out of the bullpen?
It depends on what they do between now and then, but, you know, to be honest with you, you know, why are we doing that right now? It's, you know, what we need from Germán fantasy-wise is to get us through the regular season. He's got 7 earned runs in his last 3 starts. 2 of them against Tampa Bay and the Mets, but if you want to be a good pitcher, you're supposed to beat those guys. But he did against Seattle last night, which was impressive. You know, to be honest with you, it's like I haven't thought that far ahead because, A, the playoffs are too far ahead, and B, it has no bearing on fantasy.
That's right, Scotty. Always focused on fantasy.
I mean,
honestly,
if you want to hear all about the Yankees, listen to that phony bandwagon Yankee fan Craig Carton. You know, from 9 to noon. You know, Carton. Look. Me and Craig go way back, but I knew him when A, he had hair, and B, when we both had hair, and B, when he was a Mets fan, and he was a Mets fan when they were really good. I think after they fell off a little bit, but now he's like Mr. Yankee. You know, I'm not buying that.
All right, fair enough. Yeah. If you want, keep it locked to Carton and friends.
You're either a Mets fan or a Yankee fan,
right
period.
Here.
Not when they're going good, you jump back and forth.
I agree. You got to declare your squad and plant a flag. Yeah, let's keep it moving.
Pledge your allegiance, like Giuliani said in 2000.
All right, we shall see. I'll ask Carton next time I see him. Let's keep it moving away from the Yankees. Listen, Scotty, Houston Astros win streak has been snapped at 12, and Blake Snell was the man to do it. He goes 7 innings. He gives up only 1, strikes out 6. And, of course, my boy Sergio Romo on the back end gets the save as the closer. You never know when he's going to be the opener. It took a great outing out of Snell, but the Astros win streak has been stopped. That offense didn't do much, only got 5 hits last night, Scotty.
Yeah, they're trying to set a new franchise record for wins in a row, but it didn't happen last night. Justin Verlander, a very good start, wasted with only 1 run of a support, which is a little bit of a surprise. You saw Snell last night get his 9th win. He's now 9-4 with a 2.48 ERA and a 1.06 whip. This is the breakout that we had hoped for, but you know, did he have a great start? No. I wouldn't say that. He walked 7 guys. He dodged some bullets last night.
All right,
seven walks is not a great start.
No, absolutely.
Whatsoever.
The base runners were definitely there. He did limit that incredible Houston Astros offense, though, to only one run, snapping their win streak.
Boy, did he get lucky, you know, not beating the Astros while walking seven.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I hear you. Sometimes, you know, it takes, you know, that strand rate was pretty high, right, when we look into the deeper stats. He got lucky with a high strand rate last night. Hey, Scotty, down in Colorado, an offensive explosion, okay? Your Mets follow their, what was it, their 12-run output of Monday with another 8 runs. Listen, the same kind of guys at the top of the order, right? Nemo still gets a hit. Ribby scores 2 runs. Asdrubal Cabrera, 2 ribbies. Conforto knocks in a run. The top of that order, Plawecki even, you know, kind of in at catcher. He goes 2-for-4. But it's not enough as the Colorado Rockies score 12. I got to tell you something, Scott. You know, you're not playing Roto Clio as much anymore. You know what I did last night in Roto Clio? I was like, oh, the Rockies are at home. They're facing Jason Vargas. I'm going to go with the leadoff hitter, DJ LeMahieu, just to get a hit. Just to get a hit. Scott, do you know that LeMahieu was the only Colorado Rocky to not get a hit last night, including Herman Marquez, who went 2-for-3 with, you know, with a ribby and stuff?
Crazy.
DJ LeMahieu was the only Rocky to not get a hit. Blackman 2-for-3. Arenado 3-for-5 with some bombs. Story 2-for-5. Desmond 2 ribbies. Cargo 2-for-5. Iannetta, you know, Cuevas. Everyone except my pick, DJ LeMahieu. What did you take? Cuevas, what did you take away from this game, Scott?
3 back-to-back-to-back jacks against Jason Vargas.
Yeah, you know, that'll do
if
it.
This guy doesn't get cut soon, you got to continue to attack him. Brandon Nemo. You're continuing to do. He's got 12 home runs already. He had an RBI last night. 2 runs scored, and actually, Mike Puma of the New York Post had a competition for giving Brandon Nemo a nickname, and I submitted what I thought were a few good warm ones. You know, the Happy Hammer, the American Legion of Boom, because he never played high school ball. He only played American Legion ball.
Okay.
But ultimately, you know, the Green Reaper actually won out for Nemo. But the Mets generated some offense last night. It's Drubal Cabrera with a pair of RBIs. He's starting to pick it up again with 3 multi-hit games in a row. You know, on the Rockies side, you mentioned Cargo with 2 hits, but you know, still the overall numbers disappointing. Ian Desmond has given you a lot of power. The batting average has not been good.
Yeah, I mean, oh, God bless you,
Scott. Mets losses. Right. Yeah, sorry.
I know, you're allergic to the, you're like, oh my goodness, they're scoring runs again. This is crazy. I don't know how to respond. But yeah, I hear you. Some of the bats coming alive right there.
I always know how to respond. You know, I never get too high. I never get too low. When they were 11-1, I said they're not that good. When they were playing that bad recently, I said they're not that bad. They're somewhere in the middle. They're like a slightly above 500 team, I think, overall. Met fans, especially those who are Jet fans, you know, tend to be very reactionary and doom and gloom whenever something goes wrong. You know, it's a long season.
Yeah, it is, you know, and as we know with baseball, it is a marathon, not a sprint. So we'll keep an eye and see if the Mets' offense can bounce
heard that
back.
One before.
Yeah, it's true, but the Rockies putting up 8, like you said, back-to-back-to-back home runs in the third inning off Jason Vargas. Another game I want to talk about here, Scotty. In Philadelphia, the Cardinals get a W, 7-6. Listen, top of that Cardinals order, producing. Matt Carpenter, Tommy Pham, and of course Jose Martinez as well. Here's what I want to ask you about. Greg Holland is back. You know, I think they spent a lot of money on him, Scotty, in the offseason. I'm not saying he's going to necessarily step into that closer role because, you know, Bud Norris has been doing his thing. But what about Jordan Hicks also in that bullpen? You know, throwing 104, 105 with movement. He was the last guy in last night's game. What do you think? Does Norris have a tight hold on that job? I know we'll look at the George Kurtz article next segment.
It's not happening with Hicks yet.
No?
It's not happening with Hicks yet. He blew his third save last night and, you know, ended up cashing out on the win.
With
you know,
the win,
Matt
yeah.
Carpenter saved his butt. He, you know, he doesn't have the command yet. You know, that's not happening. He throws hard, but Norris is still the guy right now. Hicks would be the next in line should Norris melt down like over 2-3 starts in a row, and I don't think Holland's got a prayer.
And it's just interesting, you know, because they did spend some money on him, you know, kind of in March, right? So I'd have to look up that contract, but it's interesting. You got whatever it is, toiling in the sixth, seventh inning.
Yeah, but the Cardinals right now are like they're 500. They're trying to contend, and putting Greg Holland in the ninth inning, no matter what he's getting paid, is not going to make you win ball games.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You listen, and especially when you're trying to contend, you don't want to take that risk anymore. The Atlanta Braves had an offer.
You have to play your best guys. You know, no matter what the contracts say.
No, absolutely. I mean, it is. I mean, to be honest, Scott. I mean, sports really, in many ways, is the cliche goes the ultimate meritocracy, right? Especially, you know, I mean, people have different salaries and all, but also in between the lines, your teammates know who really belongs out there, you know, and that's the way it goes down most of the time. Scott, I did want to talk real quick about the Atlanta Braves in Toronto. They had an offensive output last night. They win in Toronto 11-4. But I was intrigued, Scotty. It was the bottom of the lineup that was doing work. Ender Inciarte and Camargo, they combined for 8 RBIs on this one. Like that's a huge outing out of the bottom of this Braves order. You know, it wasn't Albies, it wasn't Freeman per se. Those guys combined to go 2-for-12, but it was the guys down on the bottom, Inciarte hitting in the 8th hole here, not stealing bases, but knocking in runs last night.
Well, I think savvy fantasy players know that Inciarte is very solid. Doesn't matter where he hits in the order. I think some people are a little bit fuddled that he doesn't lead off, but no matter where he hits, he's going to put up the numbers. As for Camargo, over the last week, 409 with a home run and 9 RBIs. This month, 271, 3 home runs, 15 RBIs. He's starting to pick things up. He's better in an on-base percentage league, but you know, if you need some corner infield help there, you could do worse than Camargo.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we know about Inciarte. Scott, is he always hitting? Inciarte's not always in the 8 hole, though, right? He's usually at the top of that lineup. Am I correct?
No, I don't think he's been at the top of the lineup for a little while now. I could be wrong on that, but
okay. But if he's down on the bottom of that lineup, does that give you any concerns of his ability to run?
I remember last time that they were in town in New York, it was about a month ago.
Yeah,
they had dropped him in the lineup.
So let me ask you that: if he's lower in the lineup, does that give you any concern that he would run less? You know, because like if he's hitting 8, you know, I mean, when you got like the pitcher behind you, I mean, I know that they were
in Toronto. How many steals does he have?
He's got to be around in the low 20s. I could bring it up. Bring it up. I'll do that right now. You know, let's see. He's got exactly 20.
Yeah.
And to be honest, he had like 17 or 18 about a month ago. I mean, I haven't, you know, he got 2. Listen, Scott, he got 2 on June 12th against the Mets in a game the Braves won 8-2. But since then, he really hasn't run much as of late. And you're right, he has been down in the bottom of the order. He's been hitting like 7th, I would say.
Yeah, I remember when he was in New York, I think they dropped him to 6th.
Okay.
Let's take a look, though.
But I'm looking at this game log right now.
In April, he had 13 stolen bases.
Listen, Scott, I'm seeing it right now. Okay, so he stole 2 bases.
He's had 7 since.
Yeah, he stole 2 bases on June 12th against the Mets in this game that I'm talking about. Okay, June 12th. Literally, the game before that when he stole a base was May 15th. He didn't steal a base between May 15th to June 12th, Scott. I mean, this is a guy, you're right, he has 20 stolen bases, but as you mentioned, you know, in the first month or whatever, he had 13, only 7 since. Listen, honestly, since May 15th, in the last, you know, month and 5 days, May 15th, that day that was Juan Soto's, you know, Back to the Future DeLorean debut, that was the suspended game with the Yanks and Nationals that day. Since that day, he's only stolen a base in one game, and it was the 2 he swiped on June 12th against the Mets. That's a little odd to me, Scott. What do you do if you're a fantasy owner of Inciarte right now? Like, are you concerned about that? He's not running as much.
Yeah, and what you do is, if you're a savvy player and you dove into the numbers like we just did,
you flip him because someone's going to still see that he's got 20 home runs.
Somebody might just look at the totals,
right?
And you know, not look
or the name recognition of it.
Yeah, I did see Art Day offered to me about 2 weeks ago, and then I remember looking at those numbers. And I, you know, you just refresh my memory on them.
Yeah.
Honestly, I forgot about that. And I didn't take NC Art Day because mm-hmm. I said, you know, he's only stolen, like, what, five bases in the last month. You know, somebody's trying to tell me, look how many steals he's got. You need help in speed. He's got 15 or 17 stolen bases, you know. Sell that. That's good. That's good salesmanship. Hey, you need speed? This guy's got 20 steals. You know, I'll give him up to you. You know, sell it. Of course, like, oh, I hate to give him up, but you need speed, and I got to give up something. So, he's got 20 steals. He's on pace for 45 steals. When really, it seems like the rest of the way, he may only be on pace for like 30.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me, you know, because just like you say, Scott, you know, with the name recognition of it, you think this guy is a steal guy. You see 20 steals for total, but I was definitely shocked to see that in the last month and a week or so, he's only had one game where he's actually swiped. He is second in
doing your homework, like speeds. That's why they call him the spitting statistician.
You know what it is, Scott.
Facts like that.
That's what it is. He is right now, he is tied for second in Major League Baseball with 20 steals. He is tied with a member of the Washington Nationals. He is behind a member of the Washington Nationals. Michael Taylor leads the league with 21. He is tied with Trey Turner, who has 20. Washington Nationals, Scotty, they got a win at home series, Battle of the Beltway there against the Baltimore Orioles. Listen, Kelvin Herrera comes in the eighth, gets a clean inning, only throws six pitches to get the eighth, and then Doolittle, he did get the save, but he gave up a run. That's a little bit interesting to me. Trey Turner, I mentioned with his steals, he goes 4-for-4 last night, picking up his average to 267, but he was caught stealing. Nice game, though, out of Trey Turner going 4-for-4.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Doolittle giving up one run.
Sure. You know, the job is his pretty strongly, clothing. Right?
Even the best closers give up one run, you know, here and there. It's not something that concerns me.
Whip still, you know, under one, ERA at 1.7.
Yeah, he's had a terrific season. Trey Turner, 267, 8 home runs, 26 RBIs. I think you expected a little bit better. Mm-hmm. If you play in an OBP league, I think you're satisfied.
349 OBP.
Yeah, 349 OBP. You like him better than in a batting average league. You look at him this month, he's hitting 250 with 2 home runs and 4 steals. He had 12 home runs and 12 steals in April. You know, we were talking about Ender Inciarte.
Mm-hmm.
In May and June, Trey Turner has stolen 4 bases each month. But, you know, we're a little more than halfway done with June. So, you know, that's fine. I think Trey Turner hasn't been quite worth the first round pick yet.
Right.
But, you know, he hasn't been a full disappointment. You know, maybe he's performing more like a third rounder right now.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, I expected to see the average a lot higher than that.
Wait a minute, you just confused me. You said, yeah, no, I agree. Is it yeah or is it no?
It's yeah. I agree.
Okay.
There you go. But here's the thing. Yeah, when I also look at it, Scott. Listen, Scott, yesterday, Trey Turner was hitting in the sixth hole in that order. Now, Turner is someone who's usually hitting one or two in that order. Does that give you cause for pause? I mean, it didn't happen. You know, Insignarte has been dropped there a little while ago. Trey Turner last night hitting sixth in that Nationals order. He did go 4-for-4, but, you know, down in the middle of the bottom of that order, maybe he is less likely to run as well. That is a switch for Turner. He's usually hitting one or two. He was sixth in the sixth hole last night, Scott.
Well, look, we said he's had April, he had 12, and in the last 2 months he's had 8.
Right.
So, you know, we've seen a little reduction. Honestly, I haven't followed the trend about, you know, how often he is, you know, not hitting the leadoff spot, but he still has he's got 185 bats hitting first, 70 at bats hitting 7, only 7 hitting fifth, and only 23 hitting sixth. So, you know, the sample sizes at least indicate that he's going to hit first or second pretty often. But, you know, I think, you know, we're going to have to look back at the box scores. I honestly don't know, and I'm not going to misinform anybody that it's something that just happened last night. You know, how long has this been going on?
Got you. All right, so you got to dive deeper into the stats there. I just noticed that he was hitting six last night, and he's been
actually
hitting first
Turner
or second
Turner hit second on Sunday. I mean on Monday. So,
right, that's what I'm saying. He's hitting first or second usually, but sixth is different than the top of the order.
Right.
He's been hitting first or second most
of the
time.
It's something we have to watch. You know, he's been hitting second consistently, looking through some of these game logs for the last week or so.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Switching to sixth would be a change, but something we'll just keep our eye on, Scott. Real quick, I got to let these people know, and we can talk about it a little more after the break. I saw two very odd injuries, Scott. You know, we talked about how funny it was with LeBron James punching the whiteboard. Well, Hunter Strickland punched the wall after a blown save himself. He's now going to miss the next 6 to 8 weeks. You know, you think you would learn something from LeBron James in the finals, but apparently not. At the top of the hour, we heard Dan Stratford say that looks like Sam Dyson may take over that role instead of Melanson. We'll talk about that a little bit more as well. But did you see that in Chicago? Brandon Morrow apparently also hurt his back, taking his pants off after a game, Scott. These are both very weird, odd injuries. I want to get your take on both of them when we come back. We got a big-time poll question up as well. It's 50-50 right now. Jose Altuve or Giancarlo Stanton as the face of baseball. We'll talk DFS. We'll talk, you know, closer report, all that and more. We're off and running. Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Are you new to Daily Fantasy? Are you a veteran? Either way, you can better your chances of winning money, and lots of it, by going to DailyRoto.com. Multiple people have become millionaires thanks to the guys at Daily Roto. Why not take advice from the experts? You can become a millionaire too. Just go to DailyRoto.com to rock Daily Fantasy Sports.
It's Carton and Friends!
Kevin Nealon. Hey, of all the past jobs you had, is there any one, if you could snap your fingers and go back in time and be right in the middle of it again, which of those things was the one that you missed the most or was the most important to you?
It's the Tonight Show. When I did the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson as a stand-up for the first time, I never have I had such a natural high as that. I mean, the thrill of that was just staggering.
Weekdays, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on FNTSY Radio and on your popular podcast providers.
Yeah, you down with OPP? You know me.
Yeah, you know me.
That's what it is. It's the King Scott angle.
Reminds me of my club days.
Really? Your club days? I would have loved to see the King Scott angle in his club days. Bouncing to OPP, little Naughty by Nature, hip hop parades, stuff like that.
What?
Yeah, man, big things. Listen, what? I used to love a little bit of Tretch on Naughty by Nature. Underrated group, I gotta tell you that. But we were talking, Scott, before the break, real quick. We were talking about weird injuries.
They were hugely popular.
I think as we move along, you know, they kind of get lost in the shuffle.
They were mainstream, yeah.
Yeah, they absolutely
maybe
were.
Maybe out of the time. But I guess maybe over history they are.
Because I think, listen, to be honest, what with a group like that, you know, the fact that they have, in my opinion, at least two songs that, like, if you hear now at a wedding or something like that, everyone's like, oh, and it's this song, OPP. And then obviously, as soon as Hip Hop Hooray hits, everybody's like, Hip Hop Hooray, oh, hey. And so the longevity of these songs, I think, kind of make Naughty by Nature stand out a little bit more. You know, and I think time has been good to them, Scott.
You know what the one song is a wedding or whatever.
What's
no
that?
No matter when you play it, everybody gets up and dances.
What's
Rob
that?
Rob Bass.
Oh, sure.
Rob Bass.
Yeah. It takes two. It takes two to make a thing go right. Woo!
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking. It takes two to make it out of sight. Yeah. You have two right here on Roto Experts in the Morning. It's the King Scott Angle and the spitting statistician, Dane Martinez. Hey, Scotty, we were talking about Hunter Strickland punching a wall. He's going to miss 6 to 8 weeks. Brandon Morrow hurt his back, taking his pants off after a game. He's only day-to-day, so obviously the Strickland injury is bigger. But I saw both of these, and I kind of chuckled to myself. Big blow, though, for the Giants and Hunter Strickland owners.
Yeah, it is, and you know, a lot of stories flowing about San Francisco about, you know, his maturity level, you know, over the last 2 years, and you know, the fights he would get into Bryce Harper, very temperamental.
Right.
And, you know, Bruce Bochy had commented about that, you know, saying that he needed his closer to have more of an even keel mentally. You know, we talk about mentality. You know,
sure.
There's, you know, there's something right there. Between the Marlins and the Giants, it's gotten very chippy this week because Lewis Brinson got a big hit against him. Hunter Strickland took exception to the way he celebrated. There was some beanball, et cetera. And, you know, after giving up a big hit and blowing a save, the second save of the week, I believe, you know, he went into the locker room and punched the door, I believe. I don't know whether it was door in the locker room or down the way to the locker room. It really doesn't matter. But now he's out 4 to 6 weeks. Sam Dyson will probably you know, get the first crack there. And, you know, we've seen Dyson do this before. So, you know,
we also saw him have a horrible start to the year last year with Texas. He was starting as the closer, and he pitched something like an 11 ERA at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, but then he really turned it around when he got to San Francisco.
Okay.
And, you know, got his closer mojo back. So, you know, there's one guy. There's a Roto Baller is saying this morning in their player updates on their site that Will Smith, you know, is also maybe because somebody can get a crack, but he actually set up Dyson last night. So I'm not so sure about that. You know, then you go to the closer report on rotoexperts.com this morning from George Kurtz, like he posted every Tuesday. And, you know, there's two others in the mix here. You know, Dyson may not have a long leash because you also have Tony Watson. But then you got Mark Melancon. But right now, Bruce Bochy says Mark Melancon probably isn't physically up to pitching in the ninth inning yet. So you think Melancon would be the guy, but they do have the luxury of using Dyson. And again, this team is not going to be a contender, so I don't know if they're going to sweat it in a major way or could even become a bullpen by committee. But right now, Dyson is the guy that you want to load in to pick up over the weekend.
Okay, fair enough. So that's the guy, Dyson, will probably get the first crack out there in San Francisco. Scotty, you mentioned George Kurtz. He does great work for rotoexperts.com. He's got the closer article up there. Let's dive into that a little bit more because you were talking about some of these situations. I mean, so we mentioned San Francisco, but as you know, Scott, earlier in the week, Kelvin Herrera was traded from Kansas City over to Washington. So that leaves kind of an opening for saves in Kansas City. We talked about it before. It looks like Kevin McCarthy might get the first shot there. Brandon Maurer is also around kind of in that bullpen. Those are the two names that Kurtz mentions. Do you kind of agree that those are the guys who could be the quote-unquote next man up for the Royals?
Yeah, I've heard the mention of Tim Hill as well. McCarthy's probably get the first chance, but I would keep Maurer on your watch list because he did a nice job for the Padres in the past for a little while. So he's got some closing experience, and I would not be surprised if he ultimately wins a job. By the way, in Chicago, you mentioned that whole Brandon Morrow incident.
Yeah.
Only baseball players suffer those type of injuries.
Was it like Ricky Henderson when he sneezed or something? Also,
yeah,
or Vince Coleman.
Like,
it was one of those speedsters.
Or guys using can openers, you know, stuff like that. Or I remember the first baseball injury I ever saw like that that made me laugh. JT Snow was with the Giants in the early 1990s. I think it was about 92, 93. And he's talking to a reporter in the dugout, and he makes his gesture, and he scratches his own eyeball, and then he misses the game. You know, that only happens to baseball players. But they're saying that he's probably going to avoid a DL stint. If it does happen, though, with the Cubs, you know, I think they do have some guys that can do the job in the interim. Steve Cishek has been a closer in the past. Mm-hmm. Pedro Strop can do the job, and even Carl Edwards would get some consideration if he were healthy, but he's not. Justin Wilson, I really wouldn't trust him. I think it would be Strop or Cishek.
All right, fair enough, but hopefully it sounds like the Morrow injury certainly is not as serious as the Strickland injury, but we will keep our eye on the closing situation in Chicago as well. Listen, Scotty, down in Philadelphia, Hector Neris, you know, he lost his job. He lost the spot on the team, to be quite honest. They sent him down to the minors. We talked a little bit. Yeah, right? We talked a little bit about it earlier in the week. We think, and George Kurtz agrees, that Sir Anthony Dominguez is the next man up there for the Phils.
Well, he took the loss last night, so
who else could it be? Tommy Hunter, potentially?
Yeah, I've heard whispers about Hunter in the past. He's a veteran. Maybe the type can come out of nowhere. We've also seen Udrible Ramos maybe get some saves there. But I wouldn't count out Hunter. Right now, Dominguez, I think, is still probably leading the way. But Hunter could be a dark horse. And let me tell you something. Hunter's one of those type of guys that people from the outside will say, why is Tommy Hunter the hell on the roster? You know, I was in the Phillies clubhouse, and Tommy Hunter, you know, he runs that clubhouse.
Really?
He's a veteran. He gets a ton of respect. But, you know, all the pitchers look up to him. All the media knows who he is. Tommy Hunter is a guy that is there more for the intangibles than anything else, and I would not be shocked if they gave him a shot because that guy has a ton of confidence despite the fact that you look at his numbers and his track record. He seems like a journeyman. You know, inside the clubhouse, he means a lot to the teams that he's on.
Yeah, and listen, it's interesting. You know, you can never overstate kind of that clubhouse value, that mentorship, having the veteran in there. We've talked about that a number of times. You know, you even mentioned it previously with a guy like Adrian Gonzalez, you know, even though he's not there anymore, some of the kind of other implications that they have on the team. I saw a great piece last year, at the beginning of last year, okay, on the Houston Astros, about Carlos Beltran. Okay, about Carlos Beltran and why he was like, he purposely asked to have his locker there next to Carlos Correa. And he's talking about how Jose Altuve would continue to always come up and pick his brain, you know, and having that veteran presence. The Astros really attributed Carlos Beltran to having that mentorship there as well. So it can never be overstated. Even sometimes when the performance or the skills erode or you lose a step, you're always still able to kind of play that role for the team. And I think it is very, very important.
Yeah, it's kind of like a player coach.
Yeah,
you know, kind of thing. Because, you know, and you heard me asking Didi Gregorius about it, but he said he really didn't play that role, you know, for the other Yankees.
Right.
But you get certain veterans that just try to take other players under their wing, and they naturally gravitate toward each other. I've saw it with Brandon Phillips and Billy Hamilton. Mm. I think Brandon Phillips actually got frustrated after a little while. So
really,
you know, I saw it when Chone Figgins was on the Dodgers. He was a big influence on D Gordon.
Interesting. And, you know, interesting for all of the ways that Mr. Alex Rodriguez has been a pariah in Major League Baseball, he is always known to really take some of the ball players, especially, as I mentioned, the Latin ball players, under his wing as well. You know, so
that hasn't always worked out positively, though.
I guess that's true when they introduce him to Cousin Yuri.
You know, you could say that. It's like,
you introduce him to Cousin Yuri, right?
When certain players end up with PED accusations. Mm-hmm. Or whatever, you know, that's not a good thing either.
Sure, you don't want to run in the same circles of that.
It's interesting how Yankee fans, though, like, you know, wanted him off the team at one point. You know, now he's Mr. Yankee again.
Who's calling him Mr. Yankee? Certainly not I. All I said was that he was always willing to, you know, mentor a young Latin ball player, maybe by introducing him to Cousin
Yuri. Both good and bad.
We shall see. Hey, Scott, I got another closer situation I want to ask you about. We've talked about it before. And, you know, like in Tampa Bay, how it's kind of a committee and a mess that you want to stay away from. And we say, hey, they're not going to win too many games anyway. Mm-hmm. You talk about San Francisco just now. You're like, hey, if they fall out of it, will they sweat it as much? A team that definitely should sweat it is the Houston Astros. Scott, and listen, okay, Hector Rondon has picked up, you know, saves in like four of his last five. His ERA is down to 1.38, and sure, okay, he's good. But here's the thing, like, Ken Giles is still there. You know, Davinsky still has great ratios there. George Kurtz is suggesting Brad Peacock may even get a chance if they want to keep trying things out. He also kind of alludes to the fact that this could be a landing spot for the Orioles' Zach Britton. I mean, if you have Hector Rondon right now, how confident are you that it is his job?
It's shaky. He got the loss last night. You know, he fell apart in the past when the Cubs tried to give him the job. I think they want Giles to be the guy, but, you know, he blows up in non-save situations, and I think they have an issue with that. You know, they could be four runs ahead, and they want to lock up a game. They don't want Giles blowing up.
Right.
So I think they want Giles, but they've been forced to go to Rondon. So right now, I don't think that guy is there. If they were able to get Zach Britton and he's healthy again, you know, that pretty much sews up the back end of the bullpen. If this team picks up a Zach Britton or a Brad Hand, you know, forget it. It's, you know, could they trade for Jerry's Familia and see if they could fix him? You know, that's something else you have to consider as well.
Okay, so we'll keep an eye out on that. But Houston may be in the market. It looks like, obviously, we know about their offense.
I would
be
surprised if they don't land. I'm sorry. I'm surprised if they don't land somebody. If Giles does not turn this thing around in a good way in the next week and a half or 2 weeks, that team's gonna land a closer. The Astros are gunning for another World Series title.
Yeah, listen, I completely agree with you. They are ripe and ready to do it. Their rotation is, you know, the best in baseball by all accounts. Their offense continues to hum along. They have all-stars and young talent everywhere. As you saw, even in the playoffs last year, it was Ken Giles that is the kind of pain point for this team. So, yeah, maybe Rondon is good for now. You know, Davinsky has always been good, but they kind of want to keep him in that seventh, eighth inning role. So let me ask you this, Scott. You know, we've talked about some of these names already. We were ahead of the game on Kelvin Herrera. We knew he was going to go. You know, we saw, other moves have been made. Colome, they've already kind of pulled the trigger on that one. If you are the Houston Astros, to me, the two names I hear the most in terms of moving around now, you know, kind of in the back end, would have to be, as you mentioned, Brad Hand in San Diego. And then in Baltimore, right? Britton and maybe others. If you're the Astros or another contending team, which one of them do you prefer? Which one of them are you targeting? I would lean towards Hand because he's a lefty, Scott.
I don't think it comes down to that for me. How much do you have to give up for each guy? What's the other team asking for? And this is what you have to watch fantasy-wise. If you just got Britton back, he can move to a team that, you know, like Houston, that gets saves. You want to hold on to him. But Brad Hand, you know, he could lose that job at any time. Also, you know, there's rumors about Ryman Tepera maybe being on the move, but I don't think that's a landing spot in Houston because he really doesn't have any track record at all of closing games. So I probably would not see that happening at all. And Joachim Soria has really shown that he could do the job. There's rumors that he could be traded into a setup role, but who's to say that Soria can be traded not into another closer situation?
Yeah, that's possible. And as you know, I mean, Soria definitely does have experience closing. Remember there in Chicago, Nate Jones with that arm strain is still on the DL there in Chicago. But definitely
even before he got injured, Soria.
Oh, yeah, it was Soria's job. Definitely, yeah. It was Soria's job. I'm just saying, you know, they do have Nate Jones as well. Maybe, like, they flip Soria, and then Nate Jones goes back into that role if healthy. But obviously, listen, George Kurtz does a great job over on rotoexperts.com. They are the mark of fantasy excellence, so you got to check them out. Keep yourself up to date on all the bullpen depth charts. I also want to tell people, check this out. Listen, you got to go on over to dailyroto.com, okay, /DKMS. You're going to find the link to play some free DFS baseball, okay? We got a contest going every day, all right? And listen, you could also win tickets for two to the World Series in 2018, but it's not only that. It's not only by playing fantasy baseball, not only by playing DFS, okay? We're going to start, Scott, in a couple of weeks. We're going to start the Fantasy Sports Radio Network DKMS Trivia Challenge, okay? People are going to be able to call in for their shot to win and get tickets to the Fall Classic. The number to play is 844-843-6879. Same number as always. Our guy Chris Bavone of the Manimal down there in the Fantasy Pit of Misery will take good care of you. Okay, we're doing the DKMS Trivia Challenge July 8th to July 17th. But if you want to find out more information, go on over to dailyroto.com/DKMS. Hey, Scotty, when we've done the trivia challenges before, you know, we have like different tiers of questions, right? We have like some easier questions and then they advance to the harder questions as they go along. Is that right?
Yes.
So, you know, how do you think our listeners are going to do? I hope they represent. I hope they, you know, put up a good showing.
Well, it was challenging for him last year, so
it was right?
prepared. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see. Remember, that's going to kick off in a couple of weeks, the DKMS Trivia Challenge right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. And you could potentially win tickets for two to the 2018 World Series. I mentioned that is over there on DailyRoto.com. If you go on over to Daily Roto as well, you get our DFS slate and their kind of analysis for the day. Scotty, we talk about the pitchers a lot here. Listen, Charlie Morton is the top today when it comes to the price chart. Okay, he's got a nice matchup against the Rays as the Astros look to, start a new win streak, shall we say, against Tampa Bay. Other guys have stepped down are like Gio Gonzalez, David Price. Otherwise, after that, it looks like a lot of dregs, to be quite honest. Where are you going today on the hill in DFS?
Morton's no lock, though, as the Daily Roto guys point out this morning that, the splits really don't favor him in terms of the platoon splits. You look at some of the other matchups tonight, like there's a lot better pitching on the day slate. You look at Lois Saglia for the Yankees, but then he's going against Seattle. I may like him for the win because, going against Felix Hernandez, who has an ERA well over 5, I could see using him. Lois Saglia, has yet to give up a run. So I'm okay with using him. I like Gio a lot against the Orioles, although the Orioles have, as the Daily Roto guys have indicated, have really revised their lineup, to have more contact hitting, but still enough run support there, and Gio should pitch really well. The Red Sox and the Twins, it's like David Price against Lance Lynn. Lynn has pitched really well lately, so right. I don't think it's really a lock for Price. So, yeah, I'm probably leaning towards Lois Saglia or Gio, outside of the obvious.
Fair enough. You have, Gio Gonzalez all year long, and they have an interesting matchup in that Battle of the Beltway against the Baltimore Orioles. And listen, the Orioles against
not really a battle.
Well,
not really a battle.
A matchup, let's say.
The Nationals have won the last 7 games in the series. So
yeah, they got a rivalry like a hammer has a rivalry with a nail. And, at the same time, these Orioles have a big-time strikeout rate against left-handed pitching, so Gio Gonzalez could be an interesting option there. Scotty, I mentioned before, I asked if you saw Fantasy Freestyle last night, and you said you could download it. But let me tell you this, Scotty. I truly encourage you and anybody else out there to, if you're going to see this episode, watch it. Watch the video of it, okay? We do the live streaming on YouTube, on Twitter, and all this stuff. Scott, I had a guest. I had 2 guests, and they were, one of them was, her name was Katya. She is from Russia, and she holds the Guinness Book of World Records, Scott, for the longest legs in the world. Okay. She had another friend there. They were promoting a model show, a unique model show of the world's tallest models. She was from Russia. We were talking about the World Cup a little and stuff like that. And we had a little fun in games, okay? We took the football helmets that are inside Studio 34 and we stacked them up high to try to measure her legs in football helmets. How many football helmets stacked up high do you think it took to measure her legs?
The mini helmets or the regular helmets?
No, the regular helmets that are up on the shelves in Studio 34, the regular regulation football helmets. We stacked them up. How many do you think it took stacked up to measure her legs?
Just her legs or total?
Just her legs. We just got to her waist.
I'm going to say 5 football helmets.
It was 8 football helmets, Scott. 8. We had to stack 8 football helmets to get to the top, just to get to her waist. This is Katya from Central Russia. She's 6'10". She played 2 seasons in Russia with Diana Taurasi, and she was promoting kind of this modeling show. We thought it was very funny. But I bring this up, Scott, because you got to see, we have some pictures of me with these, and she brought along a friend, Victoria, who was 6'5", and also was part of these world's tallest models, what have you. I'm going to send you over the break. I'm going to send you pictures of me.
I might have to watch this, yeah.
You have to check this out. I'm going to send you pictures with me. And then also, my producer for the video is our guy, Danny Otto. And, you know, he's even shorter than me. So we got pictures of Danny Otto there.
So that was like Altuve and Giancarlo,
that's exactly where I was going, yes. So when we talked about Giancarlo Stanton and Jose Altuve, I was reminded of the height discrepancy. And so I went right to the fantasy freestyle. But I definitely recommend checking it out. It's pretty funny. Hey, Scotty, we got an interesting matchup. Let's talk about this on the poll here. Right now, it's pretty close. Jose Altuve has a slight lead on Giancarlo Stanton, but it's like 55-45. This is close. Scotty, though, people are not voting just yet. They got to wake up and cock-a-doodle-do it here. I got. Can you retweet this? We got to get more people out there retweeting this because
yes,
I think this is going to be a close one, and we need some more votes on that one. It's going to be interesting. But Altuve has taken the overall lead in the second update of the All-Star game. Balloting, Scott, but I don't know if he's going to wind up winning this one. I need to maybe motivate my Yankee fans to go for Giancarlo Stanton, Scott. What do you think?
I'm not going to retweet it now.
Oh, you're not going to retweet it? You could retweet stick it to Smith Speeds and the all-in kid. Let's vote for Altuve. You could lobby for Altuve. That's okay.
I'd be okay with that. I'm fine if Giancarlo wins.
Yeah. Fair enough. Hey, Scotty.
Right now, I'm looking at it. Altuve's at 63%.
He's gaining. He's gaining on this, huh? Now I got it at 57-43, but we shall see. It's fluctuating. We shall see. Hey, Scott, I am very excited to let people know, though, that, you know, it's got to be in just a couple of days, right? We're dropping this exclusive Edge football package. Like, tell us a little bit more. I know you've been hard at work. You know, I know you told me we have the kind of like customizable projections based on you inputting your league settings, things of that nature. What are some of the articles that people are going to see? I mean, outside of the stuff that Jake Seeley does. We know about Jake, you know, the spitting statistician, even helped contribute to the package as well. What are some of the content? What's some of the articles people are going to be able to see from this exclusive Edge package? Why should they be getting it as early as possible to prepare for fantasy football?
Oh, just some great angles. You know, who's this year's Kareem Hunt by Brandon Murchison is just one alternative.
Is it Ronald Jones? Is it Royce Freeman? I wonder.
I'm not gonna let last year's fantasy trash. Well, you know which are bounce backs, high stakes fantasy angles with Matt Modica. Zero RB and wide receiver theories with Mike Leone. That's a tremendous one. I got to
really
edit that last week, and you know the privilege of editing some of this stuff is you know you really like reading it. Bobby McMahon and Brandon Murchison covering dynasty angles. So we got a lot of good stuff. Michael Cardano Jr., you know, talking about 30-year-old running backs.
They fall off the cliff.
Chris Ventra talking about players learning new offenses. So many angles to tackle.
No, absolutely. I got to tell you, though, you mentioned a Mike Leone article there, right, about the zero RB. Jake Seeley, who gets the hot tag in a couple of minutes, he says that zero RB is a myth. He says that there was only one year where the zero RB strategy actually worked. He's against it. He doesn't like the zero RB strategy. How do you fall out
Mike
on that? How do you fall? We'll hear what Mike Leone says, but how do you fall on that?
Mike Leone made a very good case for it, I'll just say.
Really?
That.
Really, that is kind of interesting. We will have to check that out. Remember, this is going to be dropping in the next couple of days. Hey, Scotty, great as always to cock-a-doodle-doo and wake up with you in the morning. Do me a favor, though. Check out that clip, the middle segment of Fantasy Freestyle, and let me know what you think. I'll have to send you some pictures. All right, Scotty?
Yeah. It takes two to make a thing go around.
Have a good day. That's right. It takes two to make it out of sight. Scotty Engel tags in the all-in kid, Jake Seeley. When we come back, it's Roto Experts in the Morning right here on Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Welcome back to Roto Experts in the Morning, right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Dane Martinez, and I am joined now by the all-in kid, Jake Seeley. Jake, how you feeling? I'm feeling good. My Trevor Ending Story team, got into a first-place tie in my baseball league, so I'm excited. Had a great outing out of Clevenger that helped me in Roto Clio as well, so I'm feeling good. How you feeling, Jake?
I'm feeling good, too. Congratulations on that, I guess.
You guess? No, man, this is serious. This is big. You know, I've been toiling in second place, but, I inched up a little bit. Well, listen, in the real world, what you need to do.
I was making a radio joke.
No, I understand, and I was going to play off that. I was ready to go, baby. It's the fantasy freestyle, times. I'm able to go wherever. I was going to play off that and say, in real life or in fantasy, what you need to go do is go on over to dailyroto.com/DKMS, and in the real world, you can help someone, struggling with blood cancer, of course. Jake, though, before we dive into football, I don't know if you see, but I think we have a big-time matchup in our Face of Baseball tournament today, okay? I think we have a legitimate matchup today, and I think we could use your help as a lobbyist. All right, we have the 3 seed Jose Altuve, who, by the way, is now also leading in All-Star game voting. Jake, he's going up against the 6 seed Giancarlo Stanton. I expect it to be a little bit closer. It seems like it's 2/3 to 1 right now, 66-34 for Jose Altuve. A, how do you feel about that? B, will you try to lobby for it? C, handicap this one for me.
Yeah, it's I don't really know. I can see it going either way on this one. The problem is I'm trying to remember the casual fan. I'm trying to remember what the average person in the Face of Baseball. And honestly, the casual fan is going to be Giancarlo Stanton. I mean, ask your average fan to recognize Jose Altuve. That's my issue with it. It's Jose Altuve should be the Face of Baseball. I mean, the Astros won the World Series. He's arguably the best hitter in baseball, second best behind. Well, depending on what you want to classify as hitter.
It depends on hitter, right? Yeah, in terms of contact and hand-eye coordination.
Yeah, it depends on what your definition is. I mean, best pure hitter? Yeah, I mean, he's in the conversation with Mike Trout for the best hitter. And so, in any case, I think that he deserves to be there. But I think that if you're talking about the average fan, I think that you would say the Face of Baseball is Stanton, mostly because he already was very prominent with his power, even while playing Miami, and now he's playing for the Yankees. But he's been slumping again this year. So I think it's really – I'm not going to be upset if it goes either way. I'd vote for Stanton, but I'll be happy if Altuve wins. By the way, Cristiano Ronaldo scored.
Already? Oh, he's a beast. He's hurting me.
That was pretty quick, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Me and my guy Frank Stanfill, we were doing a little World Cup action. We have a little action over on mybookie.ag about who scores the most goals in this tournament. And Ronaldo's part of the chalk, but here's the thing. I don't expect Portugal to go as far. You know what I mean? I don't think they're going to play as many games.
It doesn't matter.
As some of the big boys. This is already his fourth, I think, of the – hat trick in the opener, so this is this, four for
as soon
him.
As he had the hat trick in the opener, you were kind of screwed unless you took him.
Well, I think we are on – who are we on? We are on, though, Lukaku on Belgium, who did get 2 in his opener. And I do expect Belgium to, contend a little bit more. So maybe if he gets another game. But I digress here, unless
I think you're underrating Portugal.
I think they're going to make it to the round of 16. I think they'll advance. But then, unfortunately
– Hold on. I think Belgium will make it to 8, but Portugal won't? Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. That is correct.
Correct.
That is correct. If you look at it also, Jake, Belgium is lucky because they're in Group G. And so in the round of 16, they would play Group H. Group H had a lot of upsets yesterday. Group H is technically headlined by Colombia, who went down yesterday, and Poland, who went down yesterday. So Belgium would have to play
the top teams are losing. They're tying.
Exactly, but I'm saying going into the tournament, Group H was really one of the lower ones, and if you look at Portugal representing Group B, I believe, they would play, if they finish second in Group B, which is what I expect behind Spain, they would play the winner of Group A, and the winner of Group A
overthinking this too much.
Is going to be the cheaters. They are the cheaters, Jake. They are the colluders. They would have to play Russia in the round of 16, and Putin's
stop.
Not going to let that go down.
No.
I'm just saying. Come on now, Jake.
Everybody's
you
out
opened
there
the door. Here by giving me the Ronaldo goal.
No, I know, but everybody's saying that it's the freaking Cold War times. Russia's not cheating.
All right, fair enough. There is no collusion going on. Fair enough. Hey, Jake, listen, we acknowledge we're in this kind of dead time, especially now, even in between, say, a mini camp until training camp starts off. I was scrounging the bottom of the barrel to try to find news and notes, and I honestly couldn't find anything. I knew you would rail against me if I brought up Anna Vinatieri and kicker news, you know, so I'm not even going to go there. I saw a report that TP3 Terrell Pryor believes that he's going to be healthy, but blames his ankle for his bad 2017. As we've talked about before, there's like 27 wide receivers on the Jets roster right now, so making sense of that makes absolutely no sense at all. We are going to preview the Tennessee Titans as we continue to go team by team. But yesterday, Jake, we were talking about this football diehards draft that you are in. And we started asking questions, you know, things like, you know, going for some of these guys with the upside down low to make up your bench, guys like, in your case, Jordan Matthews and Dez Bryant. You talked to me, you know, also about how we agreed on how we like Devontae Freeman in the position you got him going way too late as the 15th running back selected in this draft behind even guys like Joe Mixon. I was talking with Scott last hour, Jake. And he was telling me some of the great work that's going to happen in this exclusive edge package. And he mentioned that Mike Leone has articles about the zero RB theory and the zero wide receiver theory. And I know that yesterday, Jake, you mentioned that zero RB theory, like, only worked that 1 year, I think, was something that you mentioned, right? It only actually worked 1 year a few years back. Can you tell the people a little bit more about zero RB theory? Like, what is it for the layman? Is it really just not drafting and until a running back until rounds like 6, 7, or 8 and then piecing it together? Tell me why that would be a viable strategy, Jake.
It's not a viable strategy. That's
Mike
Leone
seems to think so. Well, just outline what it is. Let's define it first before you poke holes in it, Jake.
No, I don't need to poke holes in it. I told you it only worked the 1 year. The stats are there. It's not me. The information and the proof and the numbers are there. It's not debatable. The proof is there. It's the fact that it is. And the fact is, if you're really doing zero, see, the problem is similar to like what I was talking about Altuve, is depending on how you define it. If you're going by the definition of zero RB, people play the zero RB and are like, oh, I didn't take a running back in the first two rounds. I went zero RB. No, you didn't. Zero RB is not drafting a running back until the fifth round. It's drafting.
Jake, that's why I said let's define it and then.
I know. That's what I'm getting into. It's the first three rounds or four rounds of wide receivers, or first three or four wide receivers in the first four rounds, or a tight end mixed in there, or maybe even a quarterback. But basically, you're not drafting a running back until round five. That's zero RB. Zero RB is you're loading up on everything else, and then you get to the running backs after the fact, and you're usually dealing with timeshare and committee running backs, and you're focusing on a lot of the pass-catching running backs, especially if you're playing, well, mostly because you do it in PPR.
Right, because if you're doing it in PPR, then you may think you could make some of that up by finding these pass-catching backs a little bit later on. So you're going and getting all your pass catchers early. Like you said, in those first four rounds, usually the three wideouts and maybe a tight end. Let's look at this football diehard draft, okay, Jake? Because you're defining this as no running backs until round five, correct? So if we look at round five, let's look at round five of this draft. The running backs that go in round five, Darius Geis, Deion Lewis, Derrick Henry, Alex Collins goes, Jay Ajayi, Lamar Miller, Sony Michel.
That's technically not even zero RB.
Why is that? I thought you were saying round five.
I said at least round five. But what I'm saying is zero RB is like those top, like Darius Geis and no, okay, it's just that's, I mean, the rest, I guess you can say the rest are maybe okay. Darius Geis shouldn't have been there. So Geis shouldn't be in round five for this argument.
You're not taking a guy like Ajayi, let's say. Ajayi is
probably Ajayi, yeah. Sony Michel, yeah. Lamar Miller, like, so most of the rest of them are okay, but Darius Geis should probably, by the time I get around to August, Darius Geis is not going to be there anyway. So just forget the fact that Geis is there. You can leave the other names if you want.
Okay, but I'm trying to get a sense of the level of running back. You know
right,
what I mean?
That's what that I'm
you
telling
have
you.
That as your RB1. Include
the other running backs, just leave out Geis.
Okay, fair enough. So that's what you'll be left with. You know, that's what you'll be left with. Are you comfortable with Jay Ajayi as your RB1? Are you
absolutely
comfortable
not
with
no
Ronald Jones as your RB1? You know, that's what you're
no
faced with to go with this kind of theory, right?
And if you notice this draft is PPR, nobody did that. Not
yeah,
one
that's
team.
What I'm looking. I'm trying to find a team that maybe went with that strategy, and I am struggling to find one. Everybody,
no, the longest,
it looks like.
The longest anybody we waited was until the beginning of the third round.
The Jarek McKinnon pick?
Yep.
Yeah, the Jarek McKinnon pick. Bobby Gomes had already had Antonio Brown and Rob Gronkowski, and then knew. But also, listen, this guy Gomes, he then drafts the best. He goes quarterback first in round four, Deshaun Watson.
This team is terrible.
You know what I'm saying? So he kind of went spread it all out. He was like, let me get one wide out, one running back, one tight end,
and one quarterback in my first four.
Yeah. Right? So that's what I mean. Like, that's kind of almost the antithesis of loading up on
but
what
look
I would
at, look
do.
At his, look at his second wide receiver is.
His second wide receiver, oh God, is the glorious Will Fuller. He's looking for the stack with Deshaun Watson.
And then look at the third wide receiver.
Oh my God, Jordy Nelson. He's going to have to start Will Fuller and Jordy Nelson on a week-to-week basis. And then, oh my God, Geronimo Allison. My man, I mean, I'm sorry though, Jake. My man then also drafted a kicker in the 14th round. And he's brought Malcolm Mitchell, who may have some opportunity, but come on. Bobby Gomes is going to need to
kicker off the board, sadly.
That's sad. Yeah, I mean, I looked at it, and in this on the chart here, it said PK2, and I was like, huh? What does that mean? But all right, but here's the other thing. Jake, if you're going to do something like this, and, you know, I'm sorry that I'm poo-pooing Bobby Gomes' draft right now, but I'm going to continue to do so. He could holler at me if he wants. If you're going to do something like that, with this crappy wide receivers, I would think you at least need to start to compile a position of strength that you can then later deal from. You know what I mean, Jake? Like, if you're gonna go like this at wide receiver, then, you know, maybe you double up on quality tight ends to try to flip one, or you get like really the best running back group in the whole league, and you don't have that either. He's got McKinnon, then Deion Lewis, Chris Thompson, and then like Chris Carson is his RB4. So where's he going to even go to try to improve in the wide receiver room? If he wants it, he's going to have to flip Gronkowski.
Yeah, well, first of all, you don't ever draft a trade. I'll never do that because it's usually clear that that's what you're doing in the first place, and nobody's going to trade with you. Second of all, you can't guarantee anything you're going to do. So the fact is, but if you're going to go zero RB, even when people were doing zero RB, is you load it up at wide receiver. Then that's why it wasn't until the fifth round, because normally, and we'll just take, let's just take Bobby's draft. Let's look at right who went right after him. Normally, so if you did zero RB, let's even just leave Gronkowski there. It's still, I mean, technically you could go three wide receivers and a tight end. So we'll just leave him there. But right after McKinnon, so his wide receiver should have been T.Y. Hilton, and then coming back, he could have had Michael Crabtree. So his wide receivers would have been Antonio Brown, T.Y. Hilton, Michael Crabtree, and Gronkowski to start. I've never done it. I would never do it. I mean, even he could have done Juju Smith-Schuster as his third wide receiver if he wanted to. I would never do that. Or you could have done Antonio Brown and skipped Gronkowski and did Antonio Brown, Tyreek Hill, and then T.Y. Hilton, then they come back and instead had, you know, Jimmy Graham or just Crabtree in general. Forget the tight end position. Just have those four wide. And that's the entire point of zero RB, is that he would have had four wide receivers and his flex wide receiver would have been Juju Smith-Schuster. You look at that and you're like, oh, wow. And then you could have Deion Lewis and
Chris Thompson.
Kerryon Johnson or Chris. So, again, I would never do that, and it only worked that one year because Deion Lewis and Kerryon Johnson aren't taking you to a title in every other year. But you can even this season, you can still survive with it. If you have the problem with is you can't miss as much. You're giving your room for error is very slim, because if Kerryon Johnson does bust and he is Ameer Abdullah, you're not going to win even with those four wide receivers. If Deion Lewis is in a complete timeshare and he's up and down every single week, you're probably not going to win. And if he starts losing more to Henry and ends up in a 30% of that timeshare, again, you're not going to win. If one of those receivers gets hurt, you're not going to win. It's just you're making your margin of error very small.
No, absolutely. And like you said, maybe if you accumulate all those wide receivers and have a guy like Juju in your flex, you maybe have some kind of position of strength. Jake, if you're trying this, are you like, in essence, are you cheering for injuries to the top guys, you know, and then trying to work the waiver wire and find these replacements, find these handcuffs? high-profile handcuffs? Is that the way? I've never done it either, okay? Jake, I'm going to tell you right now. After four rounds of my draft, I will have two running backs and I will have two wide receivers in most of my drafts. We've talked about this before. I am not going to draft a quarterback early. Like, maybe if I'm sitting there in round four and Ertz or Kelsey is still there, I might take a shot at it. But I'm going to have two running backs. I'm going to have two wide receivers. What are you, like I said, that 1 year where you say it did work, was there maybe a lot of injuries to the kind of workhorse top round guys that made it more plausible? You know, what goes into that 1 year where it did work out? How does that work? Like, what's the scenario where it is a good viable option?
It was 2015, and everybody tried to do it in 2016, but it was 2015. 2015, do you remember the number one running back that year?
2015.
I'll give you a big hint. I took him in the third round. There's your answer.
Oh, okay, Devontae Freeman.
Yeah, right. Devontae Freeman, who only played.
Kind of came off the waiver. Right, go ahead.
Only played 15 games, mind you. That's that year. So yes, your point was it was disappointments and injuries. The top five running backs that year were Freeman, Adrian Peterson, who actually had a good year, Doug Martin, who didn't even get 200 points. D'Angelo Williams with Pittsburgh.
Oh, wow.
When he was replacing Le'Veon Bell.
The Lev Bell injury, right?
And Todd Gurley in 13 games as a rookie. Those were your top five that year because it was just like you said, it was injuries and everybody who didn't get hurt fell off in other areas. I mean, it was just up and down the line. Like, again, Le'Veon Bell, but you get replaced by D'Angelo Williams. And if you grabbed D'Angelo Williams, you were doing backflips because he basically led you to the league. Like, a lot of people were taking Eddie Lacy in the top five that year. Eddie Lacy did nothing. DeMarco Murray was the disappointment with the Eagles last year when they tried to spread him out. LeSean McCoy got hurt. I mean, you could Jamal Charles got hurt. Melvin Gordon was a bust. Marshawn Lynch got hurt. I mean, there was just, as you said,
perfect storm.
Perfect storm, basically, of what happened at running back. It's just everybody got hurt and everybody didn't get hurt disappointed. So it ended up being the perfect year for it.
I got you. This year, though, you know, we talk about how there's like a pretty stable, say, top five, let's say, right? And then the last way I'm going to push you on this, Jake, is we talk more and more now how in the NFL, so few teams have that workhorse, right? You know, so many more teams have some level of timeshare or even a committee with multiple people. I can honestly only think of about, let's say five teams right now, right? Arizona, Pittsburgh, Dallas, you know, the Rams, let's say, and both teams in LA, let's say, that really have this kind of workhorse back. Does that help the zero RB case? Because if you don't get one of those big guys, you know, everybody is sort of sharing. And so that being said, maybe you can five guys that are going to get kind of the same percentage of touches and carries for their team in round five that you might get in round three.
No, because there's about 12 running backs that are bell cows in fantasy.
Is that many?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. Let's see. Gurley, I'll give you. Le'Veon, I'll give you. David Johnson is three. Zeke is four. I'll believe Saquon as five.
Cook, Fournette, Melvin Gordon.
Kamara? How is Kamara a workhorse when Ingram was also a top-end running back?
Because it doesn't matter. It's bell cow for fantasy. We're not talking about, like, the bell cow real life. It's bell cow for fantasy. It's two different things.
Okay, so define that for me. So clarify for me, Jake. When you say
we
bell
did
cow
yesterday,
for fantasy,
it's somebody
well,
who's
I'm,
going
I'm a
to
slow
get,
person.
It's somebody who's going to get you the floor of what would be like 15 to 20 touches every single week.
All right. Okay. So maybe there is more. Maybe there is more. And you could go ahead and feel happy with a guy like Shady McCoy and feel happy with a guy like Melvin Gordon or Dalvin Cook or Leonard Fournette, who you think may also fit in that category.
Leonard Fournette's easily in that category. I mean, Fournette's a bell cow in real life, too.
Assuming health, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Assuming health. And I personally, Jake, I have health concerns with Leonard Fournette. I mean, the health concerns with him go all the way back to LSU and beyond. So that gives me some cause for pause for Fournette as, you know, as a back-end RB1. But hey, what are you going to do? Hey, Jake, outside of this in this draft, your team looks really good. Are there any teams that when you look at it, you were like, hey.
I don't like my team.
You don't like your team? Oh, I mean, I like the wide receiver group.
No, that's fine. I don't like it because this is the perfect example with, despite the fact you can't let emotions and favoritism and fanmanship, like, well, perfect example for the Zeke. This is the first time I've actually owned Saquon Barkley. I've actually had a Zeke in almost every single other draft because I'm going to take the talent. And I don't like this draft because I don't like my wide receiver two, Jarvis Landry, but at wide receiver 22 in the middle of the fourth round in the PPR, I'm going to take him. I don't like Kerryon Johnson. I don't like that backfield. I think it's a miserable situation. He's going to get 12 to 17 touches any week, and it could be frustrating. But as RB30 in the middle of the sixth round, I'm going to take him. So it's like that's the fact. It's like I don't like the team, but when I go to just drafting pure talent, I drafted the talent.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm going to tell you something. I love your tight end pick, getting Rudolph, who I believe to be fourth
or
fifth.
Stupid.
Best,
yeah.
You know,
Rudolph going in the eighth, ninth
round
is just idiotic. Still,
right. So that's what I'm saying. I think that's a value for you. We already talked about Freeman on a week-to-week basis. Jake, you're going to have an advantage at running back, rolling out Saquon and Devontae Freeman. I think you have the best pair of running backs in this draft.
As long as Freeman doesn't knock himself out again.
Fair enough, but like I said, you know, you could say that about almost anybody. You know, almost anybody.
No, not a concussion. You know, concussion is different. Once you get the one concussion, it's after that. It's always easier to get the second, and he's already had multiple ones, and he already said he's not changing his running style. So, the Falcons have been trying, but he continues to argue.
This is true. Health notwithstanding, I personally, I'm pretty high on Devontae Freeman this year.
I'm just throwing out like a counter argument to people out there. Yeah, right.
No, absolutely. I also, Jake, just to continue to lavish praise on your team, I like Mike Evans this year. I think people are forgetting about Mike Evans. I'm not going to go so far as to call him last year's trash, per se, but he did have something of a little, like people, he fell off the radar a little bit, in my opinion, and I think he's one of those real solid back end wide out ones. I think unlike many top wide receivers, this is a guy who's going to be a touchdown guy year to year. Sometimes you think touchdowns.
Well, that's the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was just going off what you said. That was the biggest thing.
You were going to agree with my point?
Yeah. He only had five touchdowns, and Jameis Winston missed games and had an off. That entire team on offense just had just never got in sync. And just look at it as Mike Evans went from wide receiver 2 to wide receiver like 14, 15 or whatever. So it's just the fact that, you know, he's somewhere in between. Will he get back to wide receiver 2? No, but will he be back to a top 6-7 wide receiver? I would bet on it.
Yeah, I also agree with you. When we do our team-by-team previews, when we get down into the NFC South, we'll probably talk about that a little bit as well. Hey, Jake, we're in the AFC South, however. We're going to talk Tennessee Titans today. But the one thing I want to touch on first, you mentioned this Mike Evans, and that gives me a transition to something else I saw out there. Odds have come out, okay? And you can go on over to mybookie.ag and see some of these odds. Jake, we got a couple minutes before the break, so what I want to do is we'll talk Tennessee Titans after the break. I don't know if you saw these odds, Jake, for the first coach to be fired. You know, Hugh Jackson is the favorite, and I morally and ethically somewhat feel bad about betting, you know, and trying to make money on the misfortune of others. But, you know, money is money, right? So I got to tell you the truth, though. Yeah, Mike Evans may bounce back. I don't know if Jameis Winston is a man that can lead an NFL team. And, you know, when I see him eating W's and things like that, and I also saw on Hard Knocks last year how much, you know, everyone from Dirk Cutter to Gerald McCoy, they are putting all their faith in Jameis Winston. And unfortunately, I think that's misplaced. I think it's so misplaced, Jake, that when I look at the odds for the next NFL coach to get fired and I see Dirk Cutter as the fifth choice at 12-1, I think that is an interesting option. I've already also told you I think the wheels fall off for the Baltimore Ravens, Ozzie Newsome already. already gone, that message could be getting stale. I think Harbaugh would be an interesting long shot at 28-1. I like Cutter and Harbaugh as options. I'm not going to go with the quote-unquote chalk that is Hugh Jackson. You and I both think that the Browns are going to do a little bit better this year. I don't know if you've seen these odds, Jake. What are you thinking about some of these? I think Tampa and Dirk Cutter would be an interesting play here.
I couldn't disagree with you more on the whole Jameis Winston thing.
You think he's the leader of men? Eating wins and stuff?
I think it easily led this team. Again, I'm going to go back to something I keep saying. So he got injured and missed most of the game against Arizona. Got injured and missed most of the game against the Saints. So take those games out. Just take them out completely. You have 11 remaining games. Those 11 games, if you parse those out to 16 games, he was on pace for 4,900 yards last year. 4,900. He made an enormous leap forward last year. His completion percent was up over 3 percentage points from the year before. The touchdowns and interceptions were improving. The yards were obviously improving. He can be a leader. I think people are writing the book on him too quickly. If you talk about fantasy purposes, I love getting him at the end of drafts. I think people are just ticked off after what happened last year. So I couldn't disagree with you anymore. I still think the Buccaneers are a fine bet, though, because if things don't get on track quickly and they do have a couple hiccups, maybe Winston even gets hurt again. I don't know how patient they're going to be with all the changes that they continue to make. So I could see that for sure. To be honest with you, of all this list, looking at it, I think Marvin Lewis should be at the top with Hugh Jackson. I think like those guys should be neck and neck, honestly, because Marvin Lewis, I think, might be gone this year as well because that, you know this, I think that might be the worst team in the division. Actually, I do think it's the worst team in the division. So I would say Marvin Lewis would be higher for me, and I think John Harbaugh should be higher too. I think if the Ravens have a losing record this year, I think they're going to move on.
Yeah, I mean, we've agreed with on this when we talked about the AFC North, how, you know, Marvin Lewis and Harbaugh both have been long-tenured coaches in that division and are both now kind of, you know, to take your name, they're stacked to the middle of the table with quarterbacks, quite frankly, Jake, who I just don't think are that good, you know? And we talk about how Cleveland's going up as well. You mentioned Jameis Winston. You make some good points. All I'll say is in that kind of soliloquy that you had there, Jake, you use the word if a lot, you know, like if you take those games out, if you pace them to 16 games. I mean, you know, you're saying he looked good if you take out two games. If you take out two games from everybody, they're going
to
lose games.
You have to. He got hurt. You can't count 61 yards on 5 completions when you get hurt in the game. That's not like an if situation, like if he performs. That's if you take it out because you have to. You can't count that as a game.
All right, and if Rich Harden was always healthy, he would have been one of the greatest pitchers in the American League of the 1990s.
I'm not talking about healthy for other games. I'm just evaluating Winston on his 11 games that he played. I'd still evaluate Rich Harden on the games he played.
All right, fair enough. Jake, when we come back here, we're going to talk Tennessee Titans, break down everything you need to know. Jake, I have a feeling we are going to disagree on the tight end of the Titans as well. Marvin Lewis is going to be the coach of the Bengals until hell freezes over, apparently. He's got to have pictures or something. I don't know. When we come back, Roto Experts in the Morning, the all-in kid and spitting statistician talk Tennessee Titans.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Ain't nobody dope as Jake Seely and Dane Martinez. We are so fresh and so clean here on Roto Experts in the Morning, right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We were talking about a little bit about approaches to your draft, zero RB theory, why we believe it does or does not work. Jake, as always, is very strong. It does not work, except one year where kind of injuries and underperformance kind of eviscerated the top back. So keep an eye out on that. The Roto Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package will be dropping later on this week with at least 30 articles to get you ready for fantasy football. Jake, let's turn our attention to the Tennessee Titans, okay?
Well, real quick for you.
Oh, go ahead.
Let me ask you, because you're in teaching in a way. So
in a way,
why,
yeah. What's up?
Tell me why the abbreviation for Morocco is MAR and the abbreviation for Romania is ROU. Like, why are we just putting letters that aren't in the name?
I think Romania, I might be able to answer because, you know, I don't think they're thinking about it from the English kind of frenetic pronunciation, you know. And I think if you talk
or
about
the
it,
English spelling,
that. Yeah, I think like that's where the U probably comes in. Morocco, I have no clue. I have no clue.
I don't think either one of them really makes sense.
Neither do I. Like,
I noticed while they were playing right now, it's MAR. I'm like, what the? Why is it MAR? Where are you getting the A from?
Right.
Was it, did it used to be spelled like Romania? Did it used to be spelled with a U? Is that what you're telling me?
No, that's what I'm saying. I don't know. I don't think that's the case. I think it's just like accents and pronunciation. And when it moved over to the kind of the English spelling, it maybe changed.
Well, then that's what I'm saying. It would have to have a U in it for them. That's what I'm saying. Like, the U has to come from somewhere. That's all.
Yeah,
I'm saying.
I'm thinking like if you spell it in like Russian, there's a U, maybe something like that. I'm not sure.
Maybe.
Jay, come on.
And while we're sidebarring real quick and talking about paces, I just figured this is fun. Even we're not going to talk baseball, but just for fun for you, Buster Olney just tweeted this. This is amazing. If you want to talk about pace, Mike Trout currently is on pace for 188 hits, 140 walks, 92 extra base hits, 50 homers, 131 runs, 105 RBI, 28 steals. And an OPS of 1158.
Yeah, remember we were talking about his season would have the greatest WAR of all time, even like over Babe Ruth of like 1923 or whatever it is. It's very rare, Jake, that when I go to kind of like my my players tab, let's say, on my fantasy league, where you know you could see like the preseason rankings and then like their current rankings. When you look at Mike Trout, 1-1, you know, even the people who are usually, let's say, even preseason number one, they finish like number four. You know what I mean? The preseason number three finishes like number 10, and you're still happy with that. The preseason number eight finishes number two. You know what I mean? That sort of thing. But with Trout, you see 1-1. He is consistently the best player in the game. Absolutely. Even taking it a step further this year. You're absolutely right, Jake. You made me lose my train of thought. Oh, what I was going to say to you,
Titans,
is remember. Yeah, I'm going to get to the Titans, but you know where I also find this when you were talking about the spelling of stuff that I'm always like, where did this come from? When I see those three-letter airport codes sometimes when I'm traveling, you know, and I'm like, where did this come from? You know, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, I'm like, where did this come from? For example, here in the New York area, Jake, there's Newark Airport, which is EWR. You know,
that's fine. It's part of the word. Norfolk is ORF. It's just the next three letters. My issue is stuff like IAD.
Sure. Right.
In Washington, D.C., or is that
Portland
Chicago?
Is PDX and stuff. You know, it's just weird. Yeah. You know, sometimes I'm just like, huh, where did they get that from? So when you gave me the three letters of these countries, my mind went to those airport codes. But now you get a little bit of insight.
The same thing, because, you know, like, O'Hare is ORD. Where are the R and the D coming from?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying, you know, or do they go into like the full name of the airport, like, right, you know, have you have like international airport at the end? It's weird.
Where's the D coming from?
I don't know. I agree with you, Jake. I agree with you. I'm saying that's just where my mind went, you know, in a kind of similar situation. But I digress. Let's talk about the Tennessee Titans, Jake. Listen, you have this theory and you mentioned it with Jordan Howard and the Chicago Bears previously. I want to test this theory before. You talked about, like, last year with the Todd Gurley and the Rams, right? And you mentioned how it raised all boats. I was of the camp that, like, listen, if someone else is going to pop off, it's kind of a sacrifice somewhere else. You're saying, no. This is just better for everybody. In essence, like, if we're talking about the pie, right, I was saying kind of, like, listen, if someone else gets a bigger slice of the pie, then someone else has to get a smaller slice. And it's almost like you're saying, no. There are certain situations where the entire pie grows, right? And so then even if you get, a relatively smaller slice, you're still packing on the same amount of calories or potentially even more. I want to test this theory with Tennessee Titans tight end Delanie Walker. I think you like him this year. And for me, he's one of the guys that I think could be the sacrificial lamb, getting less targets, less potential opportunity because of Deion Lewis in the backfield, because of maybe a second year jump in Corey Davis, because they like Jonnu Smith, the kid who may come on a little bit. I think he's going to get a smaller slice of the pie. The question is, Jake, do you think the Tennessee Titans offensive pie grows this year?
Yeah, absolutely. Because look at Marcus Mariota the past two seasons. 3,400 and 3,200 yards. He's not even sniffing 4,000 yet. So the fact is, to your point, yeah, you upgrade. You get New York size pizza. You don't get that cheesy with people like that. Like around here, you order a large and it's like a 16 inch maybe. Like, no, a large is 18 inch. Like, first, like understand that. They'll stop with, God forbid, you're a place and you start calling 18 inch an extra large. I hate you, by the way, just so you know. 18 inch is a large. Anyway, that being said, that's the point. And obviously, talking pizza pie, but it gets bigger. It just, the fact is, if everything improves for the Titans as it should, and they're getting rid of the exotic smash mouth,
right?
So they should be passing more in general. If you get, let's just take Marcus Mariota to get to 500 attempts. He's never done that. His highest last year was 453. Just get to 500 attempts, have a better passing offense, and the pie gets bigger. Corey Davis can emerge, and Delanie Walker doesn't have to have a drop-off. He's not going to have a big drop-off anyway, because it's not like Delanie Walker was putting up 1,000 yards like Travis Kelce. Delanie Walker is 800 yards and 3 or 4 touchdowns. That's what Delanie Walker does.
Okay, so we still think that Delanie Walker is going to be kind of that serviceable mid-tier tight end one, if not even higher. I've seen him going everywhere from tight end like 5 or 6 in a lot of people's rankings. Let me ask you this, Jake.
He could end up there in PPR. I'd rather have him as tight end like 8 or 9.
Sure, I agree. And to be quite honest, I'm not going to have as many shares of him. As you can hear from me, I'm a little skeptical on him to continue at his age. What is he going into? Maybe his age like 33? Four seasons, something like that, Jake. And so when you talk about him in that kind of 7 to 10 range, I'm going to take a flyer on people that are ascending. I just won't have as many shares of him. That's okay. Give me Kyle Rudolph, or let me wait a little bit longer for the guys like, you know, that I'm high on, guys like Trey Burton and the like. Let me ask you this, though, Jake. Not as many people know, the Titans have a new head coach, right? And you mentioned they're also going away from exotic smash mouth. You're saying that Marcus Mariota may have a career high in terms of kind of attempts. Maybe he'll get up to like a 3,600 yards passing, a 3,700 yards passing, something like that. Talk to me a little bit more about Deion Lewis, though, Jake, because, listen, he, to me, represents this change away from exotic smash mouth. It looks like they have now more of a, I don't know, more of a prototypical thunder and lightning kind of timeshare with Derrick Henry in the early rounds and Deion Lewis really being this PPR kind of back. In PPR settings, though, you're taking Lewis over Derrick Henry. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm not all too interested in either one of them, though. Only just right. Because it's the fact that it's going to be a 50-50 split backfield, very likely. At best, I mean, honestly, it could go 60-40 either way. If you told me Deion Lewis was getting more touches per game than Derrick Henry, it wouldn't surprise me. If Derrick Henry is getting more touches than Deion Lewis, still, wouldn't surprise me. It could go either direction. It's just going to depend on two things, performance and what LaFleur wants to do. And this is really what it's going to come down to. And the fact is, it might change week to week. And that's why I'm not investing too much in them. Either one of them, Derrick Henry or Deion Lewis, for me, needs to be my RB3. And in that situation, I haven't and I probably won't own any of them. Either one of
them. Yeah. I agree with you. This is going to be one of these interesting situations. Talk to me, though. What do we expect now? It's Mike Vrabel that's the new head coach, correct? Out there in Tennessee? Like, is he going to – what stamp do you expect him to put on this Tennessee Titans team? Is it just on the defensive side of the ball? Like, how do you expect – you know, they're going away from exotic smash mouth. Mariota maybe takes the step. I'm a little bit skeptical. Go ahead. Then tell me. That's what I want to know.
No, that's what I was talking about LaFleur. Vrabel's the head coach. He has nothing to do with the offense. He's a defensive-minded coach. It's all about LaFleur. LaFleur's coming over from the Rams. We saw what he helped do with the Rams in his 1 year over there, and that's where it's coming from. You're probably going to get a lot of pull of what you saw with McVay trying to do with the Rams because LaFleur was his first man up, and they probably discussed it a lot, despite that team being basically offensively led by McVay as the head coach. LaFleur right. is coming from that tree, kind of. Again, he was only a short stint there. But he's a similarly minded coach, and that's why. That's why you're going to have the shift away from the stupid nonsense of what we're talking about. There's no more smash mouth, thanks. Exotic smash mouth, thankfully.
Fair enough. So is it safe to say, like, similar to, say, Chicago, where you have Matt Nagy coming across, who was kind of this highly touted offensive coordinator, now trying to implement some of the same systems and schemes with his new team? I guess the question, Jake, is how long does that take? Because you're trying to do this, but for the most part, you still have the personnel of exotic smash mouth, right? Outside of, say, the Deion Lewis. I mean, is this wide receiver room really equipped to do that? We know about Corey Davis. Maybe he takes a step. But otherwise, what are we talking about? Richard Matthews, Tajay Sharp, you know, Taiwan Taylor, for God's sakes. You know, okay. They were able to do that in Los Angeles because they have weapons. In Chicago with Matt Nagy, they invested in a ton of weapons, Robinson, Burton, Gabriel. Do they have the personnel to do this in Tennessee?
Yeah, and you're doing the same mistake everybody does in disrespecting Rishard Matthews. Rishard Matthews is honestly, like, right now, unless Corey Davis does come through as we expect him to, Rishard Matthews is their number one. Rishard Matthews has been plenty productive. There's a reason, I'm going to go back to what I said when it happened. There's a reason the Titans acted quickly and signed him that offseason. They didn't wait. Rishard Matthews wasn't, hey, week three free agency, who's still left at wide receiver. He was one of the first signings. They went and got Rishard Matthews, or Rishard Matthews in a limited opportunities because he wasn't the number one or even number two at times for the Dolphins, was consistently productive and their most productive wide receiver on a per route, per target basis, and they brought him in. Rishard Matthews is not an NFL number one wide receiver, but he's disrespected by fans and fantasy players. So to say that they don't have anything is vastly disrespectful.
Okay, so is that to say that Rishard Matthews may make up part of your bold prediction for the Tennessee Titans? I know you don't want to take everyone behind the curtain because they're in the Exclusive Edge package, but
I mean, could, but no, he doesn't.
No, he's not part of your bold predictions. Do you want to tease a bold prediction for Tennessee, Jake?
No, I already told you no.
All right, fair enough. My last question for you.
The teases go by the package.
All right, buy the Exclusive Edge package. It is dropping later on this week, at least to start there, and you'll be ready to win your
league. There'll be some really interesting promo codes this year, too.
Really? Oh, I'm looking forward to that. You think maybe we could get the word speeds as a promo code? We'll talk about that.
No, they're not like that. They're not like that. That's why I said they're interesting. They're not like that.
Speeds is horribly uninteresting. Last question on this, Jake. Titans over-under for the season is 8. I pass. I'm not touching that line because I could see them easily being 7-9. I could see them being 9-7 in this division. They're a team who kind of like floats along, right, year by year. What do you think about this over-under, Jake? Right now it's 8.
No, I'm not. You could ask me anybody. I'm not touching this entire division. Anybody could win it. Anybody could lose it.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I have one hot take on this division that we'll get to. I am far down on one team more than anybody else. But we only have a couple more minutes, Jake. Let's transition to Roto Cleo. Did you see, Jake? Listen, man. Did you see this Mets-Rockies game, Jake, last night? It's 10-8. The Rockies score 10 runs, okay? Herman Marquez, the starter, gets 2 hits. Every single Colorado Rocky had, like, multiple hits. DJ LeMahieu goes 0-4, so I do not get the hit that I picked at the top of the order against Jason Vargas. The Rockies scored 10 runs. Every other starter got a hit. DJ LeMahieu gets nothing. I did get a great start out of Clevinger, though. He strikes out 11 White Sox, gets the win. So that's good stuff. I think Arenado went yard for you. Did Boyd get the win yesterday?
No. Oh, wow.
No. No, he did not, right?
No.
He did not.
Boyd got beat up real early.
So you and Scott do not get the wins. I got a win with Clevinger. Thanks for hopping off Clevinger, though. But Arenado did go yard in Colorado.
Yep, Arenado did go yard.
Yeah, absolutely. Where are you going today, Jake? Let's start off with you.
Start off with me. You're not ready?
Fine, I can start off. I'm going to go chalk.
I'm looking right now. Keep going. Okay. I'll figure it out by the time you're done.
No problem. I'm going chalk on the hill. The slate today, not a lot of strong pitchers, Jake, okay?
You make it sound like you don't go chalk every day.
I don't go chalk every day. Come on, Jake. Let's
see. With the pitchers you do.
Caleb Smith, I went recently. Cook for the Diamondbacks, I went recently.
Hold on. What? I'm pulling up Roto Cleo. What do you mean recently? I'm looking right now.
I went Cook June 14th. That's within the last week. In the last 5 days, I've gone Cook for Arizona, and I've gone Caleb Smith for Miami. That is not chalk, Jake.
So when you go non-chalk, you just go off the ledge is what you're telling me.
That's right, and today is one of those days, brother.
There's
man.
There's nothing in between. It's either chalk or off the side of the rope.
That's right, and I'm going Charlie Morton against the Rays today, brother man. Give me Charlie Morton. The Astros had their win streak snapped. I think they get back and start another one today. I'm going Charlie Morton. On the hitter side, though, Jake, I'm taking a page out of your book. I'm taking a guy to go yard that you have picked earlier this week. I'm taking Joey Gallo to go yard against Jake Junis because he's got a big-time fly ball ratio. I think Gallo gets it up in the air and over the wall. Give me Gallo for the homer and Morton for the win. Where are you going, Jake?
So, yeah, you just stole a good pick on the home run front, too. For the pitcher, I mean, I could go easy. I could, you know, there's Kluber is on the mound. I'll take Gio, though, at home against the Orioles. The like disrespected well. And the underrated Gio Gonzalez. And then for a home run, hold on, let me see. Are we facing a righty today? Who's on the mound? Who's on the mound? No, nope.
Oh, I know Lucchese's where you're going.
Lucchese's a lefty, so I'm not doing that. Have you done the FanDuel home run thing? I did that last night.
I have not. Is it fun? Is it good? Is it work? Do you like the concept? Mike Francesa believes that this would make a lot of money. Trying to do this, pick players, you know, especially with legalized gambling.
That's what it is. You just have to pick three people to hit a home run.
All right, so who are you picking today, Jake? We only got a minute.
I'll go Stan. I'll go easy.
Ooh.
Although he's been in a slump. No, he's breaking out of the slump. That's what it is.
Talking about my going chalk, he picks Mike Stanton. Don't forget.
It's not. He's been dry.
Vote on the face of baseball. Mike Stanton versus Jose Altuve as well. We'll keep it going tomorrow. Carton and Friends up next. Fantasy Sports Radio Network. This has been Roto Experts in the Morning. Have a great day, Jake.